I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, New Yorker staff writer Jennifer Gonerman discusses Calif Browder. In 2010, Browder was arrested for robbery at the age of 16 and imprisoned on Rikers Island. He spent nearly 3 years awaiting trial for a crime he said he did not commit. Much of that time was spent in solitary confinement. Last year, Browder took his own life. Jen Gonerman met with Browder several times after his release and shares excerpts of those conversations.
Now, before we hear about our next story, take a moment and think back to your high school years, where you lived, who your friends were, what you were into. Now imagine that your junior and senior years of high school never happened, and instead, you had spent those years trapped in a jail cell without ever being convicted of a crime. This is not a story out of Kafka. It's what happened to Calif Browder, a teenager from the Bronx. When Browder was just 16, he was held for robbery and assault charges after allegedly stealing a backpack. He spent 3 years on Rikers Island, New York City's notorious jail complex, waiting to go to trial. New Yorker staff writer Jennifer Gonerman wrote about Browder in 2014, and the case put a spotlight on all the failings of New York City's justice system. Delays in the courts, the overuse of solitary confinement, teenagers charged as adults, brutality on the part of corrections officers. 2 years after Browder got out of jail, he took his own life. His suicide became national news and was mentioned by President Obama in an op-ed condemning the overuse of solitary confinement. The anniversary of Browder's death is on June 6th, and as a memorial, Jennifer Gonerman went back to the recordings from her hours of interviews with him. You can hear her pen scratching in the background as she takes notes.
I met Calif about 9 months after he got out of jail. This was early in 2014.
Here, eat your food while it's hot. Yeah, no, so I just have like a bunch of little questions that are...
We get together near his lawyer's office. Usually Calif showed up wearing a hoodie with one earbud in his ear, the other dangling down.
All right.
I have a whole list of stuff I type.
He came across as shy and quiet, but when I would turn on a tape recorder, he would talk, sometimes for 2 or 3 hours at a stretch. Not just about his time in jail, but about his life before, when he was still just a sophomore in high school.
I'm not gonna talk to you and tell you I was a good kid and did all my work. I did do my work, but I did fool around with the girls and the kids playing in the hallways. I was a kid doing what kids did. We were playing around in the bathroom. Sometimes get the hallway pass, play around in my friend's classroom or whatever. The teacher be like, get out. I'm like, all right, chill, miss. I'm going to go with my class. Stuff like that.
Flirt with girls in the hallway,
right.
That kind of thing?
Right.
Calif's life as a high school student ended late one night in May of 2010.
To be honest, I thought it was just a routine stop and search, well, stop and frisk. When they came out the car, they told me and my friend to put our hands on the wall, and I just thought it was a search. Yeah, don't worry about it. You're just gonna go to precinct. We just want to figure out some things. Most likely you're gonna go home. I know I didn't do anything, so I said, all right, I'll go to the precinct, but then I'm gonna come home. But it didn't, I never went home.
Calif was taken over the bridge to Rikers Island, where he entered a whole different reality.
That whole Rikers Island thing is one big misunderstanding. Like, the right and wrong is weird in there. Like, what's right to them isn't right, and what's wrong isn't wrong. It took a whole lot of getting used to it in there.
For most of Calif's time on Rikers, he was in solitary confinement, usually a 12-by-7-foot cell, for at least 23 hours a day. He got sent to solitary for fighting with other inmates, but once you got there, it was very easy to rack up more and more days. And the worst time of year was the summer.
They have a vent and it blows heat for some reason. I don't know why.
In the
summer. You would think that it would blow out cold air, but it's heat. If you put your hand next to it, it's heat.
The vents did serve another purpose, though. All day long, inmates had conversations through them.
I'll fake befriend somebody.
What do you call it, fake befriend?
Right, because I'm not really trying to become your friend, but I'm talking to you. But then they feel like they're your friend, and then they want to talk about all this other stuff. I don't want to talk about that
stuff. What do they want to talk about?
Gang stuff, or I robbed this person, or I shot this person. Mm-hmm. A bunch of dumb stuff, and I don't want to hear that. And then there's times when they talk to themselves and yell at themselves and bang their heads on the wall all day, and they're very loud. You know it's real because they'll be in an event with you for about a month or two, and they do it all day, every day. So you know it's not a game.
What if it's 11 o'clock at night? That could be going on 11 o'clock at night?
No, 11. It'd be 4 a.m. in the morning, and the dude would be kicking, yelling to the top of his lungs, Then you try to talk to them, but they don't understand what you're trying to say because they're mentally disturbed, so they get mad, and then they start doing it more. I mean, I had one dude, he was talking to himself all day, every day. He's actually have, like, how we're having a conversation, just like that, with himself, all day. That's the type of person where, once in a blue moon, I'd really listen to and just laugh to myself. Like, there was a time when, you know, he was talking about a video game, Grand Theft Auto, and one of the Grand Theft Autos that he was talking about, I actually played it. So when he was talking to himself about it and the stuff you do in the game, I was actually laughing because he was telling the truth. But when you're trying to go to sleep and he's yelling and that goes out the window, you're like, it's not even funny no more. It's really annoying.
Khalif missed his junior and senior years of high school. Teenage inmates do attend classes on Rikers. But because Khalif was in solitary, all that he had was something called cell study. A correction officer would slip worksheets under his door and pick them up a few days later.
The way I see it was like, they put me in jail for something I didn't do. I might as well try to do something. So I used to take the school thing serious. I used to really be looking forward to taking a test. And the CO will come, and then she'll pick up people's schoolwork, and I'm on the top tier. And I'll call her, CO, miss, come to such and such cell on the top. I got work for you. Hey, I'm coming up there right now. Then they don't come. Then you call captain. Captain, my work, what's going on? I'm going to find out. Just give me an hour. I'm going to come back and see what's going on. Then nobody, before you know, the shift's changing. You're like, Dad, you're trying to really progress. You really, this is school. You're not talking about anything else. You're talking about school. And they still don't even respect it. All day I'm thinking about, Dad, I'm hungry. I used to actually beg this correction officer. They would finish serving the food, and there's always extras. But it would be, you know, 2-3 slices of bread left over. But I'm hungry, so I would ask him, I would say, you know, can I get that bread? And he would tell me, no, you don't want that. Why not? Because it's the end piece of the bread. You know, I don't care if that's the end piece of the bread. I'm hungry, I want that bread. Nah, you don't want it. And they'd tell me no.
Khalif endured violence on Rikers Island at the hands of correction officers and other inmates. But when I asked him what was the worst part of being on Rikers, he didn't say the violence. It was the hunger. Sometimes, if you made a guard mad, when he came around with the meal trays, he'd skip your cell.
You're just stuck in a cell and you're getting starved and you're hungry. And then at nighttime, you can't even go to sleep because your ribs are touching. Literally, how can you not get angry at that? Just being in a situation where you can't do nothing and you know, you're helpless, that's very stressful, like, and you're just powerless. When it's hot and the walls are sweating, the heat's coming out the vent, you didn't get in the shower past 2 days, your cell's dirty, and then you read all your books already, and you're just sitting there, that's very stressful, like, it's crazy.
Do you feel yourself changing, like, I don't know, getting more angry or short temper or...
The anger would come when I would be in my cell and I would get starved. And then when I try to talk to their superiors, when I try to talk to them, they just walk away from me and then I'm in my cell. So it's not like I could tap his back and be like, hey, I'm talking to you.
There was one way to get the attention of a captain. When the officers delivered the food trays and picked them up, they had to unlock the slot in the cell door. If you were quick enough, you could shove your arm out through the slot and keep it there. The inmates called this holding your slot.
Because if you don't hold your slot, you're like an unheard voice. This correction officers would not put you in the shower, and they'll disrespect you or do all types of stuff to you, and you can't tell nobody. You'll try to talk to the captain, they'll just keep walking on you. Nobody wants to hear you. You have no voice.
If you get hold your slot, they give you more days on that?
It depends, because you got some captains that they talk to you, they work it out with you, like, what's going on?
Like a regular person.
Right. But then you got some of them, oh, you're holding your slot. I don't care, write him up. So when you take matters into your hands, and it's like a double-edged sword, it might work and it might not work. I used to tell my mom stuff the correction officers used to do to me, and it's like, I remember the days when I used to be able to come to my mom and be like, Mom, I need help, da-da-da, something happened to me in school, my mom be there, get me out of trouble. But now I'm in jail, and the correction officers are violating my rights. My mom can't even help me. It's a weird situation. My mom was always able to help, and now my mom's just crying on the phone, just it was out of her hands. So it's stressing, and then, especially during the times like Christmas and Thanksgiving, when I'm in solitary confinement, and I call my mom, and then they're telling me, we're eating this, we're doing this, we're doing that. And I'm just sitting in solitary confinement for something I didn't do.
A few times, the stress seemed to overtake Khalif. One night, he tied his bed sheet into a noose and tried to hang himself from his light fixture. By then, he had been on Rikers for almost 2 years and was still waiting for his case to go to trial. Every 6 or 8 weeks, he was brought to the Bronx to stand before a judge.
Every time with the court, it was always that side of me that telling me, like, you're going to go home. But then I tried not to hype myself up because it hurts when you think you're going home and then you don't go home. That's all I used to cut in my mind. I can't wait to go to trial so I could prove I didn't do it. That's all I used to tell myself. I want to go to trial, I want to go to trial, I want to go to trial. And no trial, no trial. And I used to tell myself, why aren't they ready for trial? I don't understand.
Finally, after Khalif had made 30 trips back and forth to court, a judge told him that he could go home today. All he had to do, she said, was to plead guilty.
The first thing that came to my head is, for them to offer me something like that, they have to know they're wrong. So if they know they're wrong, there's no point in taking it. And I told her I didn't do it. I'm not saying I did something I didn't do. She's like, I'll let you go home today. You won't have no probation. But she said a bunch of things that sounded good. And it really was tempting, too. It was a lot mentally because half of you wants to get out of there and the other half don't want to leave just over the strength of a principal. You know, all of that put together just made my head go crazy.
It's astonishing, but Khalif turned down the offer, even though he knew that if he went to trial and lost, he could get up to 15 years in state prison.
After that court day, I cried and I said, yo, what if I made a mistake? I always knew that there's always people that's innocent that go to trial and they blow. You know, like, what if I go to trial and I do blow? Dudes that was fake my friends in there, they used to tell me, Khalif, why just take it, go home. I told him, bro, you don't understand how I feel right now. I didn't do this, I've been in here 30-something months. You think I'ma just take that, it's all okay, and I'ma just go home? No.
So all the other guys on Rikers, they don't understand what you're talking about, right? They're like, that didn't make any sense to
them. Right, they call me all types of names. You're dumb, you're stupid. If that was me, I would've said I did it, went home. And I'm not gonna lie, I mean, it did get to me. When I used to talk like that, I used to go to my cell and lay down and think like, you know, maybe I am crazy. Or maybe I am going too far, but I just did what I felt was right.
At his next court date in the spring of 2013, the judge dismissed the charges against Khalif Browder altogether. He moved back home into his mother's house in the Bronx and enrolled in a GED class. But he could not stop thinking about that day in court, how nobody had apologized to him or even acknowledged the fact that he had just lost 3 years of his life.
You can't understand it if you've never been to Rikers Island. It's not like out here. Out here, you just live life and go about your business. And there's no living life. There's no life at all in there. It's just a hell. It's one big hell. There's no happiness to it at all.
If, like, we weren't sitting down and I wasn't asking you about this, do you think you would be thinking about it otherwise?
I think about jail and the stuff that happened in there and the stuff that I've seen in there every day. I just feel as if there's no way that somebody could possibly tell me to just get over it and stop thinking about that stuff. There's no way.
Is that something that people say to you?
I mean, some people feel as if I need to get over it, but... No, it's not easy to get over it.
In the spring of 2014, Khalif found out that he had passed his GED exam on the first try, and he was ecstatic. He enrolled at Bronx Community College, eventually earning a GPA of 3.5. But his mental health problems continued. He had attempted suicide, and a few times he was confined in a hospital psychiatric ward. Last June, on a Saturday afternoon, I got a phone call. I saw that it was Khalif's attorney, and I knew that it was bad news. He wouldn't usually call on a Saturday. Khalif had killed himself. We went to his house that night. His parents, siblings, cousins, aunts, and uncles were there, and everyone seemed to be in shock. On the second floor, his father showed me where Khalif had pulled an air conditioner out of the wall, looped a cord around his neck, and pushed his body out through the opening. He was 22 years old. That was a year ago. Now, when I listen back to my interviews with Khalif, I wonder, why did he spend so many hours confiding in me, a stranger, about the worst experiences of his life? I know he wanted his suffering to count for something so that other people wouldn't have to go through what he endured. But I also think about how, in the end, Khalif never got his day in court. And I think he really just wanted the chance to finally tell his story.
My friends that was in the school, they didn't know anything because I bumped into a few of them. They would ask me, where you been? I haven't seen you in a while. And I told them, like, I was arrested, I got locked up. And I had to tell them the sob story.
What do you tell them? Like, how do you tell the short version of that story?
I would tell them how I got arrested for something I didn't do. It took me 37 months to prove that I didn't do it.
That was Jennifer Gonerman.